Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Welcome to the Group Answers Podcast Show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt.
What's up?
Episode 71, Chris.
Man, moving into the 70s.
You know, that's got a nice ring to it.
It does.
All right. So we have, just at the top of the show here, I wanted to get us going. We have some news for everyone out there.
Yes, this is very cool. You probably heard the intro at the beginning. We've got a little kind of a 15-second network intro, but we are now a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Give it up, everybody.
Yes, this is a big deal. We're excited. It's like we're moving up to the big leagues. We were the mom and pop, you know, just kind of chugging along with our little podcast.
In the garage.
In the garage, pulling it off in the bedroom, you know, Steve Jobs in it. But now we have moved up to the Apple level, and we are so excited to be a part of this network. There are some great podcasts that are going to be a part of this. There's only like six total podcasts that are on this. They're the Five Leadership Questions, which is a big deal. It's a huge podcast. EST podcast, Ask Me Anything by J.D. Greer. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Making Disciples with Robbie Galley, the New Church's Q&A, and the One Thing podcast. But we are all a part of this network and so excited to be there. The mission of this Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network is to serve the church in her mission of making disciples by providing and promoting podcasts that help grow believers and the local church.
Yeah, it's pretty buzzy around the seventh floor here that this is happening to us and you and me. It's like people see me in the hallway and they're like, "Really?"
I know. They can't believe it.
Those guys.
Somehow they saw something in us that we may not see in ourselves, but yeah, we're moving up.
Well, so that's big news, and to commemorate the event, we have with us a special guest as well. So Trillia Newbell is joining us today. Trillia is the author of the kids' book God's Very Good Idea, as well as Enjoy, Finding the Freedom to Delight Daily in God's Good Gifts. That was in 2016. Fear and Faith, Finding the Peace Your Heart Craves, and United, Captured by God's Vision of Diversity. Trillia's writings on issues of faith, family, and diversity have been published in the Knoxville News Sentinel, Desiring God, True Woman, Christianity Today, The Gospel Coalition, and several others. Trillia has also spoken at numerous conferences, churches, women's retreats, colleges, and seminaries, including True Woman, The Gospel Coalition, Women's Conference, Southeastern Theological Seminary, and others. Trillia currently is the Director of Community Outreach for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for the Southern Baptist Convention. Welcome to the show, the lovely Miss Newbell.
Thank you. It's fun to hear your intro and all the exciting things going on over there.
Well, that's quite the mouthful there. I didn't realize you were such the accomplished author, Trillia, so thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right, so I have read United. I think, is that your most recent book, Captured by God's Vision for Diversity?
No, United is my first book. And so, so United, I wrote, gosh, was it 2014?
Oh, and so it's recent kind of been to me. Okay.
Yeah, recent to you, but actually, I mean, if you look in the big scheme of things, it's recent. It's just I've written several books in a row, but I'm really grateful for the chance to have written United.
I think it feels recent because the topic is
absolutely
so important for right now.
Absolutely.
So we want to ask you, before we get into the interview proper, if you will, and this book, I would recommend it for any leader. This is an important topic. We're going to get into how this applies to group life here in just a minute. But Trillia, Chris's wife was a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. My wife was a cheerleader. My daughter was a part of one of those competitive cheer squads as well as for the school. In the book, you are also a cheerleader, but not just that, as I understand it. It goes, there's more, right? You were a cheer coach, and you worked events and conferences and camps.
I did. I was a UCA instructor, and and I did competitive cheer. We were the it's called Premier now, I believe, and it was a big old deal back in the day. I guess it's probably still a big deal, but I have no idea because I don't keep up with that world. But I did.
So I have a question for you.
So many questions.
Yes, I know. We could probably spend most of the time, but we've been invited to be a part of this network, so we probably should be serious. But would you consider cheerleading a sport?
Ooh.
Okay, so yes, here's why. It wasn't just standing there with pom-poms. I mean, you have to be pretty physically fit to do a lot of the things that we were doing. So I was doing round off backhands, ring back tucks, which y'all can Google that to see what that means.
I know. Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I would have to take people and gals and toss them over my head. And so it takes strength and endurance to do a lot of the things that we were doing. And I was also on competitive teams. So it wasn't just, come halftime and do a few, or it was quite the challenge. So yeah, I would consider it a sport. I do understand why people can get confused because dance isn't a sport. And so I could see how it could be qualified as something else, but it's incredibly physical. So I think it can be,
certainly.
I'm on your side. Yeah. I love the movie Bring It On. I don't know if anybody saw
it's
that.
It's actually not that bad.
The first one is really good. Don't watch the second one. The first one's really good.
Actually not
that Kirsten bad. Dunst was really good. But anyways, it's definitely, I see it as a sport.
That's so funny.
And I bet you were a flyer. Was I right on your competitive team?
You know what? I am. I bet you think that because of just my stature. I am 5'2".
Yes.
But I am very strong. And so I would fly sometimes, but most of the time I was actually a base because I was one of the stronger females, and we had little bitty things who I could carry. So I would have most of the time been a base because I'm just really strong.
Well, Trulia, you bring quite the list of credentials in here, all kidding aside. You know, looking at your bio, and you and I have been in several meetings, and Chris, you may not know it, but Trulia and I, well, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission and our team mm-hmm. are working on a racial reconciliation group resource, and Trulia is a big part of that small team.
That's great.
So Trulia, you've done, and I think a lot of your speaking is to this issue. And you know, we talked about the book United. This is a topic that is becoming even more and more relevant, and it was never irrelevant. And so I'm sure you're being asked to speak into matters of diversity and race a lot of the time, and you and I have had some exchanges about that, and I so appreciate your heart, and again, I would recommend the book United. But we wanted to begin, and again, you know, a lot of our listenership is in the group space, group leadership, group coaching, small group pastors, and education types. So in your book, you say there's a richness in knowing, and you emphasize really knowing someone who is different from you. So Trulia, I would like, just if you would elaborate on this, maybe with a personal example of what you mean here by richness. This is about as close to the heart of group life as it gets, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, in any group situation in the church, we want people to go from surface to deep, right? We want them to know one another, to be, I know it's become a cliche, but truly in life together. And I believe that one of the great benefits of knowing people is knowing people who are not like you. So we benefit from various gifts, various the ways of thinking, how they look at the world, and how we can love it helps us love our neighbor more effectively when we know people who are not like us. An example would be just, I had a friendship, which I still have, these are still my friends, but we just live in different places now. But I, in United, wrote about a friendship that I developed with a gal named Amy, who was from Chicago, and she happened to be white, and a lady named Lillian, who was Chinese American, but so her parents were, I don't know if they still are, missionaries in China, but they were Chinese. And so they were pastor. He was a pastor, I believe, if I understand that correctly. And we were all so different. We had different views of different ways that we looked at the world, different experiences. And that helped us as we got to know one another and could care for each other. And so Amy was extremely gracious and had a because of her upbringing, helped Lillian and I work through legalism tendencies. And Lillian was incredibly gracious as well, but she was very compassionate. And so there was something in her upbringing that just taught her about empathy. And I would have been the gal with faith. And I think that's just because of my background and some of the struggles. I never saw God be unfaithful. And so I think that these differences just make us richer. There's so many benefits for us and benefits for others.
Troy, I'd love to know, as you have addressed issues like reconciliation and diversity through your writing and everything else that you do, what are some biblical foundations that you've tended to draw from as you address these issues?
So one of the things that there's lots of verses that I use and draw from, but it really begins in Genesis 1, reminding us that we are all made in the image of God. I think that's essential. That's where we need to begin, the Imago Dei. And that is the foundation for which we think and how we think about other people. We got to start there, that God values all people, and that he has given us the ability to reflect aspects of himself. And he's the creator. And it was his idea to create all of these different people. So I think beginning there is fundamental and foundational. It's the way where we have to begin. And then from there, there's a number of scriptures and texts from Ephesians 2 that we know that the veil of hostility has been broken down in the body of Jesus Christ, and he's created one new man. And from the Great Commission to go and make disciples of all nations, Jesus says that he gives a charge to his disciples, and by extension all of us, to make disciples of all nations. We know that Jesus died for every tribe, tongue, and nation. We see that throughout the Gospels and Acts. We see the church is being sent out to the nations, and that they multitudes of people from all these different places are being saved. And then we see Paul rebuking Peter and then we know that in Revelations, every tribe, tongue, and nation will be worshiping together. So really throughout the scripture from Genesis to Revelation, we see a picture of God creating a people for himself to be saved by his son, to be in community with one another, and one day to be ultimately worshiping together for eternity.
I don't want to gloss over the reference to Imago Dei there and the fact that we're image bearers as one instance. I would also like, and Chris, I don't know how this necessarily applies to group life, but it does, just to expand how most of us understand the term pro-life. You know, it's not just about protecting the unborn. It's all of life. And I think diversity, intersects with a true pro-life a true pro-life position. Trillia has referenced Romans 3:23-24 and Revelation 5:9 that in the last days will be filled with all the nations. And nations in the Great Commissions is the Greek word, I think you're more the scholar than me, but ethnia, which is the word that we get ethnicity from. Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily nationality. It's all the different backgrounds. And so for us to look like the groups that God would want us to look like, I think diversity is a part of it. Tria, thanks for that. Thanks for that response. I think that's good for all of us to be reminded of.
Yeah.
I'd like to challenge ourselves with a different perspective. So, Tria, in the book United, you are very transparent about your own experiences. So thank you for that. In fact, you use words like fear, ashamed, and embarrassed. So, Chris, I think in terms of like groups, I think we should look at groups as being like the first line of defense for these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. When people come into our buildings, our walls, when they meet our people, I think a lot of us, if we're honest, will have experiences a lot like, you know, maybe what Tria experienced, maybe for different reasons. So Tria, how would you articulate the experience of feeling alone even amidst hundreds of people? I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad that we're thinking about this in terms of groups, because it is odd that you can feel alone yet be surrounded by people. And what it really boiled down to for me is I was one of few African Americans at my church. And so my experience and different things I was wrestling through felt very isolated. It's hard to articulate, and it's hard to articulate to those who maybe wouldn't fully understand. And I was also really young. So now at, you know, 20 years later, I feel a bit more secure in who I am in Christ. And I feel like I can say what it is that I'm struggling with without, feeling like the person needs to fully understand. But there are so many people in all sorts of situations who feel alone. And what I think for a group, in a group setting, it's just good to maybe ask people, how are you doing? And then probe a little bit more, because don't just allow people to say, okay, I'm doing fine. No, really, how are you doing? How are you doing in your heart? What are the things you've been thinking about? Get really specific, because I think for me, had I not had those friendships where we did go deep, I wonder if I would have even left the church. Because I had friends who I could say, you know, I'm struggling with this. You're not going to understand, but this is what I'm struggling with. I knew that I was cared for, even though I wasn't always understood, and that I was loved, even though I was one of few. And so it was helpful for me to have those deep relationships. But I think this is what I felt is common to man. It's just different circumstance.
I think that's absolutely on, and what Brian talked about is definitely true, that groups should be the front lines of the church to combat a lot of what we're talking about the isolation and the diversity issue and all of these things. That's why we have community, and that's why we build biblical community, so people can feel like they belong no matter what their background is or their race or, you know, these feelings of isolation as it relates to diversity. But how have you seen, or can you see, groups and their various expressions help churches work towards greater diversity and unity?
Well, for groups to work towards greater diversity really is It depends on the individuals. So if for diversity, you really need to go and make sure you're inviting people in, and inviting people into your groups, and inviting people into your home, and sharing the gospel. And so those things will help bring that diversity into the group. And I'm not sure, because I would love to know more about how small groups are working for churches, but I'm not really sure, to be honest. And so if small groups are doing that outward focus, where they're bringing people in and asking people to come, then yeah, it's going to grow in diversity. But one of the warnings I would have for small groups is that it's so easy to become comfortable and insular. And so you don't want to invite anyone else in because you know these people, they've been in your life. And so it is really difficult to break into a small group that's been together for a long time. And so we do need to be aware of those things, especially if we're trying to reach and serve and love those who are not like us. If someone comes in and they are, say, the only Indian in the room, and you are, you know, a monolithic, mostly white, and they're from India, then I think you've got to be really aware of making sure that you're including them, talking to them, and after the discussion, don't isolate yourselves off in little corners and just talk to each other, you know, to include the person. So I think that's practical ways that we can work towards being inviting and hospitable to those who are not like us.
So Chris, let me say this. So our group is diverse, and while Moses is not Indian, and his wife Saraya, they're from Nigeria. And Tria is exactly right. What I've had to do, because there's a language, even though he speaks really good English, just the accent requires extra attention. Mm. Moses is really good. Both of them are really good about understanding that there is this cultural gap. Now, it's different. It's different. Mm-hmm. It's all different. Mm-hmm. But it just asks, and that's the beauty of it, to be honest with you, it asks a little more of everyone in the room, which we should be doing. Group time, when you're in redemptive discussions, when you're opening up God's Word, it should be a very attentive time. Mm-hmm. And so I think to have that kind of diversity should create more of an environment of openness to God's truth, even than this, like it was either you or Trillia said it, this monolithic more type group where everybody's really comfortable. You've lapsed into talking about last week's the most recent Kentucky football win, let's say, yeah, which comes up a lot. Right. Comes up a lot in our group.
Right.
Instead of just lapsing into that same kind of rhythm, you can call it a lot of things. We're using the word diversity. I would just call it healthy group life. It's what we should be calling it, really. But you know, I think we all get it. To have a diverse group, I think it should be the more natural, and it should create this environment of hypersensitivity in the best, most healthy way.
Yeah, I think the most difficult part of this is the inviting them in part. I mean, I think once people are in a group, there is that feeling of we all belong, we're together. It's knowing who to invite and getting out of our monolithic world to know people outside of that, to invite them into the group, whether it's a different race or culture or a line of thinking or any of that. That's the tough part, is truly being you know, the front door of bringing people in. And then once you get them in, yes, include them, understand their culture, understand them, bring them into the conversation. But first, we got to look outside and see who can we bring in.
And in fairness, Trulia brings it up in the book, I believe. Trulia, correct me if I'm wrong. But this the burden of this, it doesn't just fall on group and group leadership. There's an environmental issue or element with the church and church leadership as well, that the church itself has to be open and welcome and say, hey, we value diversity here, not this singularness. And that helps what Chris is describing. All right. One more question, because our time is running low. So, Trulia, and you've touched on this a little bit already, but why would a church work towards greater unity? It's hard. I mean, it's hard, particularly up where we live. And in some places, simply because of location in a city's profile, it can feel almost impossible. And I'm sure there are listeners out there saying, look, I'm not against diversity, but our community just doesn't offer a lot of that. So in your opinion, why is it worth the effort?
Well, it's worth the effort because we want heaven to come to earth, right? It's what we see in the scriptures. It's what we'll be experiencing for the rest of our lives for eternity. And so I think it's worth it also because it speaks a better word to this broken and fragmented world, especially in this area, to see a unity among people, various people groups and ethnicities, speaks of something radical, and it's called Jesus, the gospel. It just points to Jesus. And what does Jesus say? That people will know you are my disciples for your love for one another. And I just believe that if we can work towards it, we should. Now, it's not a law. It's not something that we need to, if we live in an area that is not diverse. Now, most area, it's hard in the U.S. at this juncture not to run into people who are not like you. It's harder. But I would say there are places that are pretty homogenous. And if that's the case, it's about our hearts. Are we ready to welcome those who are not like us? Are we learning about them at our kitchen table? Are we eager and willing so that when someone does come, they're welcomed. They're welcomed and loved and served. And it's not this odd, weird, okay, we've got to adjust the way we think. We have worked hard already to have God's heart for people and a love for those who are not like us. So we're ready. We're ready to receive them and to learn from them. So I think that is one of the So that's, I think it's a matter of the heart and a matter of action if we are able.
And it's what we're called to do. I don't think it could have been put any better. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for joining us today. And how about we do it again one of these days? And certainly look forward to continue working with you. I think we've got a meeting coming up in a couple of weeks, right, on this project?
We do. I'm looking forward to that.
We are too. So, Chris, you want to tell us about Ask Me Anything, one of our sister shows?
Yeah.
Brand new sister shows.
Yes, on the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. It's a brand new podcast. The co-host, J.D. Greer, you may have heard of him. He's a president of the SBC. And Todd Unzicker will provide you with honest answers to some of your toughest questions. In each episode, you will hear Pastor J.D. answer a theological, ethical, or leadership question. So whether you're attending, serving, or leading in the church, this podcast is for you. And that's called Ask Me Anything.
A bit of trivia. Todd Unzicker used to write for Rivals.com. Oh. He was a beat writer for the University of Georgia football team.
There you go.
If you want to follow Trillia, you can follow her on Twitter at twitter.com, Trillia Newbell. Let me spell that for you. TRILLIANEWBELL. She also has a blog, www.trillianewbell, same spelling, .com. Trillia, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful day, and we will stay in touch.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap it up for episode 71. Chris Charette, our engineer and co-host and researcher and
subscribe on iTunes. Go to iTunes, find Group Answer, subscribe, and rate us because people like that. So go do that.
We will see you next time on episode 71. That's going to do it for the Group Answers podcast.